Hey everybody, and welcome to the fourth edition of the They Shoot Actors Don't They podcast. Seems like just the other month we were doing our first.
Yep.
Here we all are, number four already.
Four.
It's been quite a ride.
Seasons. Speaking.
What are your guys' favorite memories of their first three podcasts?
I wish this was a video podcast so we could now go into the Golden Girls wavy lines and be like, remember what happened last week? Like they did on the Golden Girls every third episode. And you just ruined my segue. I was going to go into a speaking of traveling. Speaking of moving places, Katarina. You were just on a plane to France.
I have my segue for that. It's going to be, I hope you guys like hearing Kat talk, because she went to Cannes and we didn't.
So, everyone has a choice. They can hear me talk about Outlander that I saw on video last week.
I've been playing UFC a lot.
Yeah, we can either talk about the UFC Undisputed video game, which Jeff and I have been immersed in, or Kat can give you a bunch of news from Con. So,
A for Aaron and Jeff.
That was the fourth edition of the podcast. Cast your votes in the comment section, and we'll be back in 2 weeks with the results. Or, Kat, you can start by telling us about your favorite of the festival, I think, was Gaspar Noé's new movie.
It's
the
true.
Wildly pornographic.
I totally thought we had stopped and we're still going. Keep going, sorry. What?
You thought that we were going to cut out that amazing multi-segue intro?
Totally did.
Why would we cut out all that sweet foreplay?
My favorite movie that I saw when I was in Cannes. It's a hard one to recommend. But my favorite film...
Like
all Gaspar Noé movies. This one is hard to recommend, but for very different reasons. It's called Enter the Void, and where his previous features, including Irreversible, the Monica Bellucci rape movie, and I Stand Alone, which is my personal favorite, of those two.
Which features a nameless actress getting raped.
Features a nameless actor, or rather not as well known as Monica Bellucci to us, actor being really intense and creepily violent throughout. Enter the Void is not violent in the way that Noé's previous films are. It features a lot of sex, but it's explicit, but it's not violent. And really the thing that makes the film hard to watch is the fact that it's almost 3 hours long and features a lot of totally abstract, like, color and strobing light montages and scenes that are just basically just shots of the camera moving over the kind of tops of the buildings of Tokyo. It's essentially an experimental, like, it's the closest thing to an avant-garde experimental film that I saw in the festival. There are lengthy sequences that are just flashing lights and color. It opens with an amazing drug trip where you're seeing it through the main character's eyes and he takes some DMT and then you proceed to, like, the screen just is his hallucination for about 5 minutes. So it's kind of movie.
Yeah. Well, you were very excited about it when you came back and we're talking about it in really excited terms. And I like Gaspar Noé a lot, but I haven't heard anything said about this film that makes me at all excited about it.
Well,
tell me more. 2.5 hours of flashing lights and pornography.
The film essentially is about this young man who, very close to the beginning of the film, dies, but you watch the entire thing is told through his point of view. So it continues with his point of view even after he's died. While he's alive at the beginning of the film, the camera is, you're literally looking through his eyes, like it registers every blink as, you know, a moment of black on the screen, etc. After he dies, it sort of goes back and forth between memory, and in the memory sequences, the camera's behind his head, so you sort of see his back in the frame, or kind of the present moment in which he's dead and floating above the action, and so the camera's sort of looking at everyone from above and sort of tumbling around what's going on. And it's it sort of follows his friends and his sister as they kind of cope with his death, and as he, I guess, comes to terms with it as well. And it was really visually innovative and really interestingly shot. There's a couple of really striking sequences in it, and it's kind of like an endurance test. Like, you really have to... If you get into it, then it's absolutely mesmerizing, and I think if you don't, it's probably boring.
And the one that you saw is not a finished product.
Yeah,
right?
I heard before the premiere that it was not a... that they still had some color correction and some other sort of technical CGI-type things to fix up. And
okay, but there's no
edit? I'm not sure.
They're happy with the 4-hour.
The 380-minute cut is ace. Yeah, no, I'm not sure if there's still more editing to be done. I guess we'll see when the film, you know, has its premiere, its official finished premiere, whenever.
Okay.
Whether they cut it down, they might. I mean, there's a few sequences that could stand to lose a few minutes here and there.
That is a serious amount of time to be watching an experimental film.
It's not entirely an experimental film, but it is, you know, there is a narrative.
It's experimental enough that people are going to walk out after an hour if they know there's still 2 hours ahead.
Possibly. Well, you know what? There was a surprising lack of walkouts in the screening that I saw. I thought that a lot more people would lose patience with it. And in the theater that we were in, which is about seats over 2,000, I think that there were maybe only about a dozen walkouts. So people stuck with it for the most part. I don't know if there were any reviews coming out of Cannes that were particularly positive, but for the most part, the audience seemed to stick it out. I mean, there were more walkouts in Antichrist, for example, for different reasons. It's not boring so much as assaultive.
And one of the other really highly anticipated movies that you saw was Inglourious Basterds. After much finagling, you managed to, to get a ticket.
It was harder to find tickets to that film than I can't even think of what would... Like, finding the Holy Grail might have possibly been easier than finding Inglourious Basterds.
We're so
tickets.
Spoiled being in Toronto, because even a hot, hot ticket movie at TIFF, not that difficult to get tickets to.
Yeah.
You don't get shut out of many things at the big film festivals
in
town.
And that Inglourious Basterds was filling, like, this theater that seats 2,200 people is ridiculous.
Yeah.
It had three or four screenings over the course of one day, three screenings over the course of one day in that large theater, all of which were full. And the morning screening had, I was in line, we couldn't get official tickets, and I was in line for a secondary theater that was sort of like an overflow theater that seats another 400. And it was filled with just overflow from the main theater, which seats over 2,300. And there were still ticket holders who couldn't get into either screening. Like, it was insane. It was like a crazy...
And this is people who woke up at dawn to get in line.
Essentially, yeah. Like, we were out of the house at 7 a.m. to get in line. And nobody from our line even really got in, because the people who were in the main screening that came over and had priority filled the theater that we were waiting to get into. So we eventually got tickets for another later screening that day. And it wasn't bad, but I think mainly disappointed by it because I was expecting it to be a completely different film than it was.
Yeah, it's crazy that they're marketing this as a hard action film when it sounds like anything but. Like, it's a conversation picture.
It's mostly conversations. There's a lot of setup. There's a lot of elaborate kind of staging of the relatively few action sequences, and there's a lot of sort of setting up the elaborate plot, which kind of revolves around the Bastards, who are this group, you know, group of eight Jewish soldiers, and their plot to sort of kill Hitler and the entire Nazi high command. But the problem with the film is that it's marketed as this buddy film, this, like, eight dudes on a mission film.
Yeah, Dirty Dozen kind
of
thing.
That kind of thing. And they barely are ever in any scenes together as a group. You don't really get to see them working as a team. Some of them are so poorly kind of realized as characters that you barely remember them by the time they get back into the picture, you know, half an hour later or whatever. It's also a very long film. It's like 2.5 hours.
Well, Tarantino has also said, because it did not get good reviews, so this past week he's come out and said that, oh, don't worry, it's not the final edit. he wants to add another 20 minutes or so. Well, and it's like, that is not a complaint that I heard about the movie. Yeah. It was too short.
On the other hand, if what he adds, if those 20 minutes are additions that make the bastards who are in the title of the film seem like real characters as opposed to total throwaways, then that might improve it, actually. Because the main, I mean, there's a great subplot about sort of the power of cinema, and there's an interesting subplot about this young girl who, parallel to the bastards, also is plotting to kill Hitler because, you know, her family was killed and whatever, and she's sort of in hiding.
Her family was killed and whatever.
Yeah, you know, it's like everyone else, it's the Holocaust. But I mean, you know, it's not, she doesn't have a better reason to want to kill Hitler than anybody else in world, any other Jewish European in World War II. Like, it's, her family was killed, and so she wants revenge. And she happens to get the opportunity because there's going to be a Nazi screening of a propaganda film in the theater that she runs. So that's, it's this whole subplot. But that storyline is actually pretty great, but it's has nothing to do with what the movie is supposedly about. So it's sort of, it's like there's two competing films and a whole lot of talking.
Well, who knows what the final product will end up like, because that guy loves editing.
It's true. But I will say that the final sort of battle action sequence or whatever is really fun, and there is a certain amount of action payoff. It's just that the balance between talking and action is way out of whack. Well, I mean, I guess the other film that I really liked that is worth noting, just because it was by far the most talked about film while I was there, is Lars von Trier's Antichrist.
Yeah.
And it's, I really liked it, but I, again, it's a hard one to recommend. Like, I would recommend it to you guys, but
because we're a couple of preverts.
Yeah. Pretty much. I mean, the film seems to be designed pretty much entirely to frustrate, annoy, and offend Lars von Trier's audience. Like, and specifically the people who might consider him an important filmmaker or whatever. The sort of fancy pants audience that, you know, cares about art in cinema, etc. This is designed to, like, give them the finger and then stick the finger up their nose and then, like, give them a wedgie. It's just, it's everything about it that seems pretentious or pompous or over the top is
obviously Lars von Trier's bully movie.
Pretty much. I mean, there are sequences in it that are totally ridiculous that you can't help but laugh at, and there are sequences that are really sort of pretentious and absurd, but they're all, it's obviously so carefully calculated to have exactly that effect that there's nothing accidental about the film at all. And then, of course, there's a couple of really grotesque, you know, violent scenes, which is where the walkouts happened in the screening that I saw.
And is it Charlotte
Gainsbourg?
Gainsbourg, okay.
Yeah, it's Willem Dafoe and Charlotte Gainsbourg. There's no one else in the movie. They're pretty much
She won the actress award.
Mm-hmm. She did a great job. I mean, it was an intense role. I mean, essentially the film is about this couple who are mourning the death of their son. And they go to their sort of summer cabin to kind of, you know, he's a therapist and she's grieving really, really intensely. And he sort of tries to help her through this kind of weird program of exposure therapy, taking her back to this place where she had spent the previous summer with their son, and that she now has these, you know, kind of horrible associations with, and it just all goes to hell.
It sounds like a less ethnic Vinyan.
Kind of, yeah. It's like a North European Vinyan.
If you like Vinyan, but hate Thai people.
Yeah, it's pretty, but it's, I mean, compared to, like, I'm a fan of Lars von Trier, and I think of his films that are, like, awesome films about abused women, like, that what makes Dancer in the Dark or Breaking the Waves so successful is, in part, the fact that they're so emotionally overwhelming, and it's hard to not be moved by them, and you kind of go on this journey with the character. This one I found really cold and clinical, and by the end, like, you kind of knew that...
Well, no. Alright. I don't know, by the end? I'm keeping myself very spoiler-free on this film, and...
I don't mean by the end in terms of what happens in the plot. I mean, by the time the film was over and I assessed my reaction to it, I realized that it had no emotional attachment to either character, and it didn't matter what happened to them, whether they came to a good or a bad end. I would have had the same...
to our listeners for my little outburst. For those
I
listening...
I know how you feel about spoilers. I'm not actually talk about the... what happens in the film. God
for those
forbid.
Listening, Jeff actually just plugged his ears and looked like he was about to puke. That is a real thing that happened.
Yep. What are some of the films that you saw that maybe aren't such high profile films that you really liked?
I really liked Thirst. It was in competition, but, and it got kind of really mixed reviews. It's the Park Chan-wook film.
The guy who did Old Boy.
Yeah, and it's also another one that was really long. That seemed to be the theme of the year. But it's basically like this kind of an emotional story about love and abuse and a contemplation on relationships, but it's a vampire movie, sort of.
But also it's good, because it's a vampire movie.
It was totally amazing. It's basically about this priest who's, like, a good man, and he contracts vampirism or whatever in this very downplayed, low-key kind of way. Like, it's sort of, you realize, like, as he realizes that this has happened to him, it seems like such a not a big deal thing. Like, they treat it in the movie in this really low-key way, where it's sort of almost as if he, like, got a cold sore or something. Like, it's totally weird. And then it's like him dealing with it and like playing Mahjong with this family and like sort of falling in love with this girl who's in a crappy marriage. And the whole, like, there's some really, really interesting scenes and some really fun violence and gore and some really awesome visuals. But on the whole, it's like the vampire aspect is kind of secondary to the relationship drama. So I think that maybe that might have been why some of the reviews were kind of mixed. I think some people were disappointed by how not about vampires it is, but I thought it was really good. I didn't see the other Korean film that was in Cannes, which is Mother, by the guy who did The Host.
Oh, yeah.
But I heard from a couple of people who had seen both of those films that it seemed as though those two directors had swapped ideas and directed films that each other should have made.
Huh.
So I don't know what to say about that. But I heard that Mother was amazing.
Did you guys ever see Abel Ferrara's Addiction?
No.
Came out, I guess it was early, mid-90s, but it was, I think it was Lily Taylor starred in it as a New York philosophy PhD candidate, I believe, who contracts vampirism via like a mugging, I think. I don't know, it's been a while since I've seen it, but it's another thing like that it's less about, it's less a vampire movie than a philosophical study of this girl trying to like intellectually work out what has happened to her. It's quite good. I think that and Nadja came out at the same time and were both kind of along the same lines. Anyways, really good vampire movies.
There you go.
You saw the opening of Drag Me to Hell this week, Jeff?
I did.
And you were excited by it?
I was very excited by it. Though, it was funny because I went to the theater. I had just seen Service, and I was like, all right, I'm not tired. I'll go see
You've just seen what?
Service.
Oh, yes. Okay.
So I was like, I'm not tired, though. I'm going to go see the midnight movie or midnight screening of Drag Me to Hell. Get there. There's another title beside Drag Me to Hell. There's an Up midnight screening as well.
And I was like, oh no, I didn't know I was going to have to choose.
But I was like, no, I'm going to see Drag Me to Hell first. I knew Cat.
I'm not going to be a guy by myself going to a midnight screening of Up and being forcibly escorted out.
It gets safer if I go to midnight screenings. It's like that. I just called myself a pedophile. Okay, so
I can't even edit that out. I wish I could.
Yeah, sorry. All right. So I went and saw Drag Me to Hell. I knew Kat had seen it the night before at a preview screen, and I was like, again, my sort of spoiler queen issues. I was like, I need to see this before people start talking about it.
Before fucking Cat opens her fat mouth about the climax.
Already I was having to, like, put my hands over my computer screen when I was going on Twitter. It dragged me to, just blocking my view.
I've already heard a few things, and I was like, that made me want to see it more. Like, a lot of excited reviews, but people saying things where I was like, oh, shut up. I don't want to know that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Even though it's, like, you know, interesting little tidbits, and I'm just like, fucking tell me it's good.
Like, I had even avoided all the trailers and the TV ads. I went in, like, pure. I was like, all right, Sam Raimi's making a horror movie. I know there's a witch or a gypsy. Fine.
I'll just wait my 2 years until it comes out.
And I did, and it was worth waiting.
Yeah, you were really excited, but like, I heard it was a really fun kind of Army of Darkness style return to like fun horror stuff.
Sort of, but like straight up really horror. Scary. Like it's okay. The sound mix is super loud. It's just like tons of jump scares and just but fun ones.
Yeah. It was like the good kind of fun horror that's not like a comedy with scares. Like, it's actually a horror movie, but one that is fun as opposed to being like just dark and
just
bleak.
Just gore porn?
Yeah. Like, the tone was of a fun tone. That's good.
It's so, I mean, I love horror, but it comes out quite rarely, and even more so now to find a horror movie that's not just like a gorier version of 80s slasher movies is
becoming like so such difficult. A downer.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
Martyrs. You're like, I love that. Like,
yeah, I love Martyrs.
But it's
Linterior.
Not a fun horror movie to put on.
No, it's, yeah, it's like, it makes you sad. And they're awesome experiences, but when you're leaving it, I don't want to have to like put my head between my legs for a couple minutes to recover.
And that's the thing, Drag Me to Hell is completely fun, but also, the scares are so intense, I found it extremely stressful. And, like, I don't know if I'll go see it again in theaters, because it was a lot.
Wow.
Yeah. I the screening I went to, I was drinking, like, wine pop. I found these
At the concession stand.
At the concession stand, I purchased these cans of fruity pop that is mixed with wine. And is like 6.5%.
You bought canned fruit spritzers, is what you
basically,
bought.
Basically, yeah. At the LCBO.
You just don't want to say it.
Because I don't remember what the name of the product is, but it was.
You brought, like, you bought pop, malt Capri Sun.
It was carbonated strawberry flavored wine. It was. Oh, they were gross. Lord. But.
but that's how we do movies.
I think that I would have been totally, like, glued to my seat, stressed out, if I hadn't been a little, like, tipsy and, in like, ready for good times. So I felt like a roller coaster ride. Like, it was totally, like, nervous, scary, fun, but in, like, totally, yeah. The sound design is so amazing in that film. There were a few times that I actually, like, nearly gave myself whiplash just from the shocks of the sound alone that was on the screen. It was amazing.
Like, the sort of, to give an idea of how it's intense, stressful, scare, followed by fun and funny. It's like, the gypsy will appear, it's a big bang scare, and you jump in your seat, and then she's appeared, and then vomits maggots into Alison Lohman's mouth.
Wow.
It's amazing. The amount of things that get dumped on Alison Lohman's head or into her mouth is also stellar. So much gross. So amazing.
Okay, well, let's cool it with the nerd talk. Jeff, you wanted to talk about seeing the Muppet movie on the weekend?
I sure do. Not only did I see it this weekend, I saw it the weekend before as well. The Fox played it, and I woke up, made the hour-long trip to the beaches, loved it, went to the beach, ate a club sandwich. It was a wonderful afternoon.
If you end up going to a Muppet movie anime for the third time, your face is going to be on a poster.
Here's the thing. If it was playing again this coming weekend, I would totally go again. It was perfect both times, filled me with so much joy.
I haven't seen the Muppet movie in a long, long time, but it's not a movie I have a soft spot for the way that a lot of people
You know what? Have. I remembered very little of it. All I remembered was a few stills from when I had a Muppet Movie Viewmaster reel as a child. So it was totally so like...
So better than the Viewmaster then?
Almost.
You probably said that almost in too much of a dramatic whisper for anybody to hear you. But you said almost.
I did. But yeah, it's so great. It's so good that it's almost... When people are now talking about Up and how great Pixar is, it's almost like, I love Pixar, but they have nothing on the Muppet movie.
I'm not even slightly excited about Up. I could not care less about seeing Up.
And let's talk more about the Muppet movie.
Yeah.
It's the best. It should be regarded as a classic film.
Well, it is. Do you know when it's playing at the Fox again? Because I think it is playing again.
Is it?
Soon, isn't it?
I don't know if it is.
I could be wrong, but I thought it was playing again this month.
I don't think this month, but it would be amazing if they did it again. If they put it again, okay. I would go see it again.
Well, it's their, I think, foxtheater.ca is their site.
I think so, yeah.
And people can check that out.
But be sure to rent the Muppet movie, because it's the greatest.
You know, I might just have to do that.
One for Muppet movie, please.
And speaking of the Fox Theater, they're doing some really good programming right now, and they're doing a 60s and 70s film festival from June 19th to June 26th with a lot of good selections, including some from the 50s. But they're showing stuff like they're showing Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, Suspiria. I think they're showing The French Connection, Superman. Bunch of good stuff, like killer stuff. And the Fox usually gets quite good prints. So I'm really looking forward to that. And I think Suspiria is playing on June 21st, the day before my birthday. So I might go check that out.
Start of birthday weekend, 2009.
Woo! So, yeah, I'm really excited about that film festival.
And your birthday.
Fun.
Also my birthday.
They're playing my favorite Bertolucci film of all time. They're playing The Conformist.
Oh, okay. Are they playing La Ventura as well? Or am I making that up? I think they're showing La Ventura.
I don't see it, but...
They might be showing that at the Cinematheque.
Yeah, maybe they're showing it at the Cinematheque.
My picks are Cinematheque Ontario's retrospectives of Jean-Pierre Melville and Otto Preminger. I've only seen Bunny Lake is Missing by Preminger.
Then so good.
Yeah. Of Melville, I've only seen The Samurai and Army of Shadows. So
are they showing... never mind, I can't even remember the name of it. One of his hard-boiled films. Anyways.
I'm not sure. They're showing a lot of...
Preminger especially, they seem to be showing like 24 films. Or something.
Yeah.
Like, it's like a lot, which is exciting, because I've also only seen one or two of his films before, and be an awesome chance.
Yeah. So those are my picks of the 3 months.
Yeah, do you know when those are starting? I think the Preminger is starting this month.
It already started Sunday. They showed Anatomy of Murder.
Okay.
Or Anatomy for Murder.
And you know what? Anatomy of a Murder.
Of a Murder. Yeah. Got it wrong both times.
One thing I noticed at, I think it was at Eyesore Video when I was there recently. The Cinematheque is finally printing up promotional postcards and putting them in video stores.
Awesome.
I can't believe how long it took them, but that's a really smart idea.
It's taken them forever to promote to anybody that is not walking down the hall of the AGO to the Cinematheque.
Hey guys, you want to see a movie? How long is it? 8 hours? No.
So, Kat, what are you checking out in the next couple weeks?
My pick of the week is, other than Drag Me to Hell, which is awesome, my pick of the week is a little bit of Canadian content, the Review Cinema.
Kat, we call it CanCon. In the biz.
In the biz. Here in the T.O., the T-dot, whatever. Bit of CanCon for
it's
you.
CanCon in the T-dot.
416-905.
Here in the 416, there's a little theater called The Review over on Roncesvalles, and they apparently have a new Canadian Films program that they're going to be running, and this is the first screening of their Canadian film program. I don't know how often.
I think it's a monthly
thing? Okay. So anyway, the inaugural Canadian film screening is going to be on Monday the 8th, and it's a screening of Vincenzo Natali's Cube, a low-budget classic from the mid-90s.
Like a low-budget sci-fi horror kind of thing.
Yeah, Cube, I don't know how well Cube did, other than, like...
I think it did well.
Fairly well-known.
Sort of a cult film, like, sort
it
of
did
a,
well enough know. That there are straight-to-video sequels.
Yeah, I think there's, like, there's three Cube movies out there.
Yeah, there's a lot.
Which he had nothing to do with, other than the first one.
I'm sure.
And they're showing Elevated, a short film with Cube as well.
Oh, that's cool. Elevated is a cool short.
When is the date for that one?
That is Monday, June 8th at 7 p.m. at the Review Cinema, Cube and Elevated. And Vincenzo Natali is going to be there in person to do a Q&A with his co-writer as well. Nice. So that's pretty cool.
And you heard about Vincenzo Natali apparently had a couple private screenings of his new film that you heard about?
Yeah, in Cannes. I mean, it's been like sort of there. I remember seeing like a press kit or a promo booklet of some sort for his new film coming out of Cannes last year. But it's been almost a year of post production since then, and now it's finally finished. And so it's called Splice. It stars Adrien Brody and Sarah Pauly, and it's sort of like a mom and pop Frankenstein story, like a sort of a creepy sci-fi. About a pair of scientists who create this sort of alien-human hybrid creature and then kind of have to deal with the ethical and other implications of what they've done. But, yeah, I've heard that it's all done and that it's awesome-looking and that the year spent on post-production was well worth it because everything,
they had some
effects look amazing.
I guess it was a couple months ago on Twitch Film, they had some stills from it that looked incredible.
Yeah, the creature, the sort of alien, half alien or half whatever creature, looked pretty awesome in those pictures.
Cool.
So,
I'm excited to see that. It's been a long time since that guy did a movie that was received as much as it should be.
Yeah.
This might be one that gets him out there a bit more, I hope.
Guillermo del Toro is an executive producer on it, so it'll get
there you go. That'll
That's
help.
Not a bad name to have on your movie.
Yep.
So thanks to our remarkable opening this week, we didn't even mention our names at the beginning, so we'll do that now that we're saying goodbye. thanks for listening, everybody. Sorry about the delay on this one. We were so busy with our film festivals. And rather than doing a live report from Cannes, we decided to wait and do an extended piece with Kat when she got back. There you go. It's free. I don't know why you guys are complaining all the time.
Oh, also, it's now on iTunes.
Yeah, you can now find us on iTunes as well, and that will be on our website, so you can subscribe to us. We'll be automatically sent to your iTunes. No more worrying, checking back constantly for when the MP3 is up. It'll be delivered straight to your computer. So all the links are on there. theyshootactorsdontthey.com, including lots of print reviews and extended reviews of a number of things from Cannes. Including Inglourious Basterds and what else did you have up there from Cannes?
Antichrist. And I'll actually be putting up two or three more, which I've finally gotten around to writing, so those will be up in the next day.
Excellent. So. I'll have some long-delayed Hot Docs reviews popping up there soon. Jeff has an extended review of Drag Me to Hell up there right now. So take a look, leave some comments, and we will see you again in a couple of weeks.
For the Aaron birthday podcast review.
Woo! I hope you guys like podcasts with noisemakers.
Woo!
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.